My name's Richard, and I'm here to talk to you about Backbone. Has anybody heard of Backbone or use Backbone? Wow, awesome. And how many people do things like XAML? Okay, so a few less. ASP.NET? Okay, cool. jQuery? All right. Okay, cool. So I spent about the last 6 years working in XAML, and about the last sort of 2 years working with JavaScript and HTML. And what I want to show you is just how we can port Backbone to Windows 8, keep the majority of our code, and go to the pub early. So I'm going to show you two apps. First one is a web app, which is this one. Tested on cross-platform, cross-device. It's all nice and responsive. And the second app is this one. Unfortunately, the images that come from the third-party API aren't particularly high-res, but this is the other one I want to show you, which is a Windows 8 app built using pretty much the same code as the web-based app. Okay, so where to start? Always a good question, I guess. But where I want to start today is around consumerization and the fact that consumerization is changing everything for us. And it's changing the way that we now need to react in order to provide consumers with the experiences that they want on all of the devices that they have. And mobility continues to be a catalyst in sort of driving this demand on. So one potential way of solving this problem of consumerization is that we have multiple teams. But the problem with that is that it's costly. And because of that factor, what happens is those app teams generally are a lot smaller in order to balance the cost. We also have to address the issue of maintenance and maintainability. We've got a lot more code now, spanning a lot more devices than what we ever had before. So that can be a bit of a problem. And the big one for me is experience. How do we maintain this experience across all of these devices and platforms? So a bit of history. Always good to have a bit of history in a presentation. A couple of years ago, myself and my team, we worked with a customer that had a product that was built natively on iOS, iPad and iPhone. And what that customer wanted to do was port that offering to a Windows 7 Slate offering, and also to a Windows Phone. When we did the Windows Phone piece, awesome. When we did the Windows 7 piece, not so awesome. We just couldn't get performance. We were building in WPF, couldn't get performance. We rebuilt in Silverlight, still couldn't get performance. We rebuilt with WebStack, we got the performance. So very interesting for me, coming from a background where I programmed natively, should be the fastest way, but it wasn't. Now, this was a few years ago, and the device that we were using was low-powered. So maybe context is skewed slightly, but the optimizations in the browser just kind of blew me away, really. So I decided that it was time for me to change and start looking at other technologies, especially web technologies. And this, strangely enough, coincided with a trip to Build to the Windows 8 preview conference. And a number of aha moments kind of happened for me there, mainly while I was drinking beer. So after drinking quite a lot of cold beer in the Californian sunshine, I kind of came to this conclusion that something's just never changed, really. We face the same problems, but just on a different platform. But we have the same design patterns that we can use as craftsmen to solve those problems. So actually, this shouldn't be too difficult. But then when you start thinking about more, then the problems get bigger, because we have to support cross-device and cross-platform, and we have to have this continuous experience. After a few more beers, I then sort of came to this other conclusion that, well, some things do change, and some things are changing, and they're changing for the better. And they're changing so that we as developers can, can sort of prosper to deliver JavaScript client-side applications and architectures that go across device and across platform. Okay. So I just quickly put together what I call a bucket list, really. These are all the things that I face when I build an app, whether that's an iOS app, a Silverlight app, WPF app, Android app. These are all the things that I have to solve. So let's just go through them quickly. First up, async, single-threaded in a browser, as you guys probably know. So we don't want to hog that. Really pretty simple to solve that async communication problem using jQuery. So that's not too bad. Some sort of MVVM, MVP, MVC, some sort of design sort of framework that helps us. Now, in the JavaScript world, there's lots and lots and lots of these frameworks. And if you're kind of new to this, or if you're experienced and you're sort of still trying to weigh up which MVStar framework you want to use, the link that's on the slide is awesome. It uses all of the different frameworks, well, not all of them, but it uses the majority of the popular ones that are out there, and it solves the same problem. So you can go away, have a look at the link, check out some of the examples, and find what works for you. So Knockout. Heard of Knockout? Using Knockout? Okay, interesting. So there's a lot of buzz around Knockout, and it's pretty good. And I'm just going to paraphrase this because it's a little snippet from Adi Asami's blog. So choose Knockout if you want to use data binding using a declarative approach. Choose Knockout if you want to have two-way binding. Choose Knockout if you want models to notify views when they change. Choose Knockout if you want flexibility of implementation. Choose Knockout if you want to build in HTML templating. And choose Knockout if you want the ability to extend it so you can create your own plugins. Pretty powerful piece of kit. OK, I'm going to paraphrase this one as well. So choose Backbone if you want to build a large client-side architecture and you require design patterns to separate your layers. Choose Backbone if you want built-in helpers for dealing with RESTful endpoints. Choose Backbone if you want an imperative approach, allowing views to update when the model changes. And choose Backbone if you want to have a complete control over your architecture. And really, some of that comes down to what you want. I can't say that Backbone is going to fix all your problems. I can't say that Knockout will. So it's really a sort of judging point from your perspective, and that todomvc.com website will help you out. Local storage. Always good to have a bit of local storage. For local storage, I use Amplify.js. Totally awesome. So simple, even a fool like me can use it. There's also a plugin for Amplify with Backbone, which means it just plugs straight in. It's a one-line piece of code, and hey, boom, got local storage. Nice and easy. Responsive web pages. Okay, so this is kind of the meat, the big one. So when we want to create an experience that can be used on an ever-growing number of different devices, it's pretty hard to do. Previously, we would have had lots of conditional statements in our code to kind of sniff out what's the browser, what should we do, what layout do we load up. And it'd be much nicer if we could delegate all of that work to a framework. So the framework that I personally like is something called Bootstrap. Probably you guys have heard of Bootstrap or use Bootstrap. And this does everything for me in terms of responsive layout. It's all based around a 12-column grid. And what I'll show you later on in the demo is how we can create Backbone models and views to fit in and use this 12-column grid so when we scale our windows on different devices and platforms, everything still looks good. There's something else on the slide there, which is something called Less, which you don't have to worry about right now. But if your application is using a lot of CSS, it's definitely something to go and look at. OK. View management. So there's something that I use, which is called the Layout Manager. It's a plugin for Backbone. And it does exactly what it says on the tin. It provides me with a mechanism to manage my views, which means that I get more of an app-like experience. I'm not navigating from one page to another page to another page. Everything's very app-like. It's very WPF-like, or Silverlight-like. And it helps me to achieve this single-page app implementation. And that's very, very important in sort of conquering this next step that we're facing. And we can do this by levering Ajax. And we're going to take Ajax to, well, not to the max, but pretty close to it. So what do I mean by Ajax everything? Well, exactly that. All our HTML, that's all Ajaxed. What do I mean by that? I mean, all the HTML that I'm going to show you, that's all kept on the server. I only load the HTML that I need when I need it. So when we're swapping our views in our single Chrome, I'm going and getting HTML from the server, bringing it down, loading it up on the screen. It's not hit the web app, load all the HTML for the app. I only load what I need. Because again, we're trying to deliver a great experience to cross-device, cross-platform. We don't know, is that device low-powered? We don't know. Does that device have a poor network connection? We don't know. The other thing that we can do is we can use something called require.js and something called AMD, asynchronous module definition loading. And what that allows us to do is it means that we can effectively apply this kind of DLL-style approach to our JavaScript modules. So again, just like the views, we don't load all the JavaScript up front. We only load it when we need it. Helps with our performance. Okay, data management. So typically, you're going to be dealing with data sets and potentially large data sets. And in those sorts of conditions, you want to be able to have some sort of pagination control. The Backbone Paginator does exactly that. It provides a really simple and nice integrated approach to Backbone, which allows us to get pagination straight into our application very, very simply. It supports two mechanisms. It's got a client-side paginator and a server-side paginator, depending on what your endpoint is that you're talking to. So it's nice and flexible to help us that way. Okay, and the final one, as all you guys kind of showed at the start, for UI stuff, animations, transitions, jQuery is the way. And it works seamlessly with Backbone, so that's really, really nice. And that's my bucket list. Shorter than maybe it could be. But in general, those are the main sort of crux moves that I want to make sure that I can solve by moving into this web app style environment. So next thing I want to tool up, BDD. Anybody heard of behavior-driven design and stuff? A few people. Anybody using BDD in there? Okay. How about TDD? How about test-driven development? Okay, a few. Okay, cool. So let's go through these. This is another Richard's bucket list. So for BDD, there's something out there which is called Jasmine. Really, really nice. Something else that I use that I've forgotten to put on the slide, sorry, is something called Synon.js. I can give you that later if you come down to the front if you're interested. And that's a mocking and stubbing framework. So when we're testing and doing test-driven development, there's a tendency that we need to mock or stub certain things, and Synon provides us with that. Jasmine also works on Windows 8, so that's quite nice. Okay, next up, Grunt. Anybody heard of Grunt? Two. Grunt is awesome. Really is. If you're doing JavaScript stuff, I'll show you in a minute. This Grunt is fantastic. You install Grunt using NPM, the Node Package Management. So if you want to use Grunt, first of all, you've got to install Node. Once you've got Node, you can get Grunt. Once you've got Grunt, you can start building. And Grunt allows you to be able to create a project straight out of the bag. Grunt, my lovely project, hit return, fill out some details, some metadata, it'll create your project for you. Bit similar to MS Build, if you've ever used MS Build. So here's just a quick high-level sort of pseudo build script. First of all, when I build my app or sort of parse or interpret my app, what I want to do is I want to run my tests against my code. Once I've run my tests, I want to use JS hint. Anybody heard of JS hint? Cool. JS hint is awesome. JS hint basically is a checklist for my code. It's a bit like FXCop or some stuff that you can get in Sharper. It kind of gives you a style guide and sort of says, hey, you forgot to do this. It's probably best that you do it. So once I've hinted my code, I'm going to uglify my code, and then I'm going to compress it. So I'm going to compress all my JavaScript, all my CSS. I'm going to bundle it all up, stick it in a folder, pick that folder up, put it on the web server. Job's done. So Sublime, not Visual Studio. So Sublime Text Editor, great little text editor. It's got a NuGet package style way of allowing you to add plugins in. It's got all your context-sensitive help that you'd expect from a great editor. It's got great snippets in there for jQuery, JS Hint, Backbone. Nice. It's also got Shift-Control-B. So if you're a keyboard freak like me and you're used to doing Shift-Control-B, you can do Shift-Control-B in Sublime, and it will build your stuff for you. You could also write C# in Sublime as well, make server things. Local development server, I use WebMatrix. Nice and light, does what I need, and great, superb, I can't really praise it enough. When I want to push my website up to Azure, click on a button, push it up to Azure, it's there. Nice and easy. Okay, so this is what we've come for. So Backbone provides us with this design pattern. And it contains routers, models, collections, views, and events. Everything that we're kind of used to when we work in a XAML-based world, when we start looking at things like MVVM. So let's take a look at the router. So I currently view the router as a controller or a presenter, something that controls the state and logic of my app, the workflow through my application. We can define a number of routes inside, so we can have a number of routers for different areas of our application, for different parts of functionality in our app. And the other very useful thing is that the router API is a nice wrapper around the history API. Just a quick example, really, of a router. So you can see that we extend the router. We've got a couple of routes in there, which are quite nice. Each route maps to a function that's going to handle the request that comes in. And also note, it takes parameters. It'd be pretty useless. Well, it wouldn't be that useless, but it's a lot. It's very useful when you want to pass parameters around. OK, so events. Events are also core to what we do. And the reason why I say that is because they help us keep this separation of concerns. They help us keep things apart from each other and stop them colliding together. We can bind to these events, just like what we would in WPF or Silverlight. So that's also a really, really nice way of keeping these entities separate. If you have done XAML before, IMPC, nods or shakes, I notify property change, very, very similar. Data changes, views bound, view gets notified, ta-da, new data's on the screen. Nice. Okay, so models are effectively client-side representations of our JSON. Models can be data-bound, and we'll see this in a minute. Models are easy to create and can be supplied with defaults, so that when we're hitting our endpoint, we have to wait a little bit. Nice to sort of inform the user about what's happening, and we can do that by defaults. Collections are ordered sets of models, and they have these really nice events that we can bind up to, again, helping us keep things separate. Okay, two really important function calls with collections. One is called fetch. Really important to call fetch, because fetch is going to do everything in terms of getting our data from local store, getting our data from an endpoint, and populating our collection with stuff. So it's really important that we call fetch. The other one, which is awesome, and it's the one that you're going to find that you override, and that's the sync method. And basically, the sync method takes a CRUD operation, so you can pass a create, a read, an update, or delete to it. You can pass in the model that you want to operate on, and you've got a callback, just in case anything goes wrong or you want to do something on success. So it makes things nice. And the way that Backbone sort of deals with this CRUD operation is really, really slick when building your apps. The other thing that Backbone does, which is very helpful, is it sort of extends this CRUD operation and maps it onto RESTful endpoints, calls, verbs, however you want to describe them. So a create is mapped to a post, a read is mapped to a get, an update is mapped to a put, and a delete is mapped to a delete. And we can see how we can use that. And if you're familiar with RESTful endpoints, then that should look familiar to you. So very useful, very consistent. So views generally consist of a number of things. Code behind, markup, styles, data binding, animations. That sort of sounds very familiar to what we've been told when we build XAML apps. Okay, so that was Backbone, just a quick overview. And if I did this, my transition doesn't work that well. Does that look familiar? Anyway, I thought that was funny, but obviously my humor is not the greatest. So the other part of Backbone is underscore. And underscore comes bundled with Backbone. Really underrated piece of kit. Very, very useful. And there are two parts to underscore. It's kind of Jekyll and Hyde a little bit. And the first part really is all about sort of, I view it as link queries. So if you're doing link stuff today, manipulating data, mangling data, underscore will do those things for you, so it's really nice. Helps you shape the data. There are 80-odd of them, so these are the ones that I find I use the most. The other part about underscore is that we can do HTML template binding. So just like what you've seen in Knockout, where you can go into your HTML, you can put JavaScript in there to do your template binding, hook up to your view model, get the properties, push them out on the screen. Underscore does that as well for you. If you're familiar with Mustache or you like Mustache, you prefer Mustache, you can use Mustache, which is another templating engine, with Backbone. So that's quite nice. Okay, so let's try and bring everything together. So a web request comes in, kicks everything off, and we do three things. We create our router. We create a collection. The collections that we create extend our pagination plugin, so we get pagination for free. It extends the local store, so we get local store for free. So now we have a collection that paginates and is ready for local store straight out of the box. The next thing we do is we create our view. And when we create our view, we pass our collection to it. We bind up to our events. The view extends the layout manager. And when the DOM is ready, it fires an event. The layout manager says, OK, I'll go and fetch the templates that we need. Stick them up on the screen. And then once the fetch comes back and the model gets updated, we get these events. And because we're bound up to the view, our view renders with the new data. Nice. So let's just walk through that again, but in a slightly different way. Web request, initialize the app, fire up the router, new up our collection, pass the collection to the view and new that up. Layout manager gets called and created. Layout manager decides that it's going to render the page for us and which HTML to go and fetch from the server. We go and do a fetch call. That inherently calls a sync method. On success, We populate the collection. We notify that the UI changed. And we render the view. It's a really nice, clear sort of process and workflow, which I really like. One thing to note about the sync function, when we call fetch, because we're using local storage, you don't actually know where that data is going to come from. And what I mean by that is when you call fetch, if you've got local storage and that local storage hasn't expired, it's going to hit local storage and it's going to bring it back. If there is nothing in local storage or local storage has expired, it's going to hit the endpoint for you. But you don't make that choice. Backbone makes that choice. You could override it and change it if you wanted to. That's beyond too far, sorry, no. Okay, so the web app. Newsreader app uses the Guardian API, really nice API. I'm going to show you the web app using pagination. We'll use local storage and all the other stuff that we've just had a look at. Okay. But before we do that, what I want to do is just sort of decompose the view so we get a bit to try and make it a little bit clearer because there is quite a bit of code. So this is my main layout, and it's defined in main HTML. This is my section list view. It shows all of the sections that I want to render inside of the reader. There are about 20. I filter them out using underscore, so that's quite nice. These are the items, defined in the item.html. This is my section header. It's defined in the header.html. This is my story list view, defined in the story-whack-list.html. And then this is an item for each of those stories that we want to show for that section. Okay. Let's do it again. And this time, let's do it with a bit of HTML. So in the main layout, in our main HTML, we have three views that we're going to render. We're going to render the section list view, the section header, and the story list view. So that's our section list view that we're saying we want. That is effectively a UL. That's all that is. These are my items. These are defined in a separate template. I've got a link in there. We'll come on and have a look at that in a minute. You notice it says model.getID. We've got a section header. You see my data binding sort of in place there where model.get, property of the object. And I've got my story list view in there. So three views in main.html, and those are all the three views that we see, and some HTML snippets for you to have a look at. Okay, so the next part of the reader, once you hit a story, we want you to go and look at a story and read the contents of that story. For this, I have a story layout. It's defined in story.html. It defines two similar things, which are my section list view my section header, and the thing that's different is this time we're going to render the actual story view. I call it the story view mainly because it's the thing that displays the information of that article, and again you can see there some of the markup that I use, and I'm binding up to properties just like I would in Knockout or WPF or Silverlight, or even using a bit of Razor, I guess. Okay, demo time. Let's pray that the gods are on our side. I'm just going to flip this into this. Okay. Well, that hasn't worked. Okay, so this is the app. When I scale, we get a different layout. Let's scale it this way, get a different layout. I just went and got some more data as well, by the way. And when I expand it that way, we get a different layout. So Bootstrap is doing all of that for me. It's recognizing how much space is left, and based on its 12-column grid algorithm, mechanics, however you want to call that, it's then transposing the view to be suitable for that particular screen size. I've got some simple sort of, if it will work for me, if I use a scroller, maybe. I've got some sort of infinite scrolling type stuff going on, so we'll always get more data. There we go. Spinner should be spinning when we get more data. And I can click on one of these. And we don't see anything. And that's the article. And at the bottom, I've got some buttons that take us to the next article in that section. So fairly simple app, but is doing quite a lot. Let me just try something. I've not tried this before, so let's see how well this looks. I just want to show you. Come on. So this is what I'm pumping into local store. And for each page that I go and get, when I push that into local storage, I use that the number of that page as a unique ID for that section, so that if I close the app and come back to it, and I'm looking at that section and everything is still in sync with local storage, I'll keep scrolling down until I hit the last page in local storage. It will then go and hit the endpoint and bring back more data. One of the reasons why you don't see them in sync is because, and if you've worked with third-party APIs, you possibly know this, some of the data that comes down due to whatever reason, DRM potentially, or the fact that the content isn't that great, I strip this stuff out. And because I strip it out, sometimes the page numbers go a little bit wonky. Okay. So this is the editor, and these are my notes. Okay, so the editor is called Sublime. Nice little editor. And at the bottom here, Richard, you've got some build errors, but we'll have a look at those in a second. So structure of my app, let's just close this. So dist is my distribution. So whenever I do my sort of packaging up, everything goes into this dist folder. I've got a JavaScript folder. In there, I've got an app folder where I define my models and views. I've then got this app.js, which defines my router. And I've got a main.js where everything sort of gets kicked off, really. I've got a lib folder with all the libs in that I use, and a plugins folder in there so you can see all the different backbone plugins that I'm using. Templates, these are all the templates that are up on the server, all the HTML templates that are up on the server, and they map directly to my backbone views. And this is my grunt file. So, when you create a new project using grunt, what it does is it sort of asks you for metadata. And you put that metadata in so that when you push your app up to Git, all that stuff that you see on Git, information about your project, it pre-bakes all that into your project for you so that you can tweak that or just push it straight up when you're ready to go. So that's quite nice. And that's all the meta bits at the top. Concat does what it says on the tin. I'm going to concatenate JavaScript, CSS, and I'm also going to concatenate my minified files that this thing is going to minify for me. I've got a CSS min task, which will minify all my CSS, believe it or not. I've got some linting, got some JS hint stuff. I've got my uglify task, which is going to mangle all my JavaScript for me. And we need these tasks at the end to basically sort of kick everything off in sequence for me. Okay, so let's see it in action. So in Sublime, as I said, if you're a keyboard guy like me, then what I can do is I can press Shift, Control, and B, and you see that it says, Richard, you've been naughty, you can't go to the pub, you've got some errors. So where are these errors then? So story.js, I've got an error, so let's go over to story.js. What have I done naughty in there? Okay, I've got a console, let's get rid of that. Okay, and it's also saying, oh, we've got missing semicolon. Oh dear. Okay, let's whack that on there. Let's build again. Okay, so built, done without errors. My dist has updated all of the files that I'm going to potentially deploy onto my web server. They're all there. They're all packaged up. I pick them up, drop them onto my web matrix. And when I look inside of web matrix, I've got my distribution index.html here. And we can see that in action there. So it's really nice, simple way to be able to interpret and parse your JavaScript to make sure it's all looking good. Okay, so what's next up then? So that was the environment. That was the editor. We took a look at Grunt. We did a Shift-Control-B. Had a look at that output. Let's have a look at index.html. And let's actually pick the one that's a bit further down here. So we've got a whole bunch of Bootstrap library includes at the top to help me with different layouts. I've got some stuff to do with scrolling to help me do my infinite scrolling. And then I have all my script that I'm going to be loading into my application at some point. Important to understand, we have underscore, then backbone, and then after backbone, any plugins that we want, then we use them. And at the bottom here is effectively app code. Okay, so some of the templates, you've met some of those already, but let's just go and have another quick look at this one. So if you remember, just going back to the slide, and also remembering about defining these different routes, what I've done is this is the section item, and when I click on a different section, we want to move to a different section. And the way that I do that is I grab the ID from the model that I'm bound to, which will be news or travel or business or technology or something like that. And I put that in that link. And when I click on the link, what it will do is it will fire that request, and the section handler that I've defined for that route will get executed and load up the section with the stories. If we just go and hop over quickly to the story list item, you can see here now a little bit more clearly potentially that I've put story, whack, model ID. I've had to do some other things because sometimes a string isn't very good. But in this case now I'm using the story route. Previously I was using the section. You can also see my data binding in action there as well. Okay, so let's go and look at some of this data. So this is the model for the section. I extend the standard backbone model. I don't do anything really of any major league stuff here. And that URL, if you put that URL in the browser, it'll take you to the place where this JSON is defined. So that's quite nice. We've got this URL route. Makes a lot of sense to sort of wire that URL route into our model. We've got different defaults that we can provide. And down here, I've got a collection, and that collection is my section collection. And again, I define the URL. I've put in local storage. So I'm going to save the different sections to local storage. And then this is my sync function. So depending on what we pass in is going to cause a reaction with regards to what CRUD operation that we do. If it's a read, we're going to look at local storage. If it's great, we're going to create a model in local storage. If it's an update, you know. So if we don't have anything in local storage, then we need to go and hit our web server. And what we do is very similar to what you're probably doing already with jQuery. Use jQuery, go and hit the endpoint. When it comes back, I parse the data, and then I stuff that data into local storage. This is my parse function at the bottom. Potentially, you won't need to do this in some of your apps. The reason I'm doing it is because I only want certain sections in my app. I don't want all 20-odd sections. So I use a bit of underscore sizzle dizzle. There's a filter function. And I basically say, filter on these sections for me. The data that comes back, I then push into local storage. Okay. Let's take a look at the view. So if you remember the section header view, that just shows us the current section that we're in. It has a template defined. You can see that here. Let's go and have a quick look. So we go template section header. OK, so that's my header template that I'm using for this view. It's got a tag name. So tag name's quite interesting. This is the HTML element that I'm going to insert into the DOM. So I'm going to insert a H1 into the DOM. And then this is going to come inside of it. So we've got H1 span. Layout manager, boilerplate code, really. This is serialization code that the layout manager provides you with so that we can parse our model into our HTML. And that allows us to be able to do that model.get property name type thing that you've seen. Standard backbone, you can do a .2 JSON. And when you do a .2 JSON, you can just reference the property straight out of the bat. But with the layout manager, it requires you to use this serialize. We've got a before render and an after render, some jQuery stuff in there just to make it a little bit nicer. My section list view extends this time. Note that this actually extends the layout view. I have a template, section list. Go to section, go to the list.html. OK, so it's a UL. We have an initialize function, and I'm binding up to a reset event. So when the model changes, it's going to fire a reset event. When the reset event fires, I'm going to call render. And when I call render, I'm going to do this call here. I'm going to say add everything. I've got a little spinner as well. So we saw that little spinner that spins whenever I scroll down and it's starting to fetch more data. That thing fires up. And when the data comes back, I fade it out. Pretty simple, but effective. OK, so this is important now. So in my add1 function, I use the layout manager's baked-in function, which is called an insert view. And that insert view is going to insert me a UL. Alongside with that, I'm going to create this new view. And you can see that I'm going to pass in the model. So I'm going to have a UL with a view associated to it, pass in the model, which will have a name, travel, or business. And I'm going to get it to render it on the screen. Again, starting to get familiar, another serialized function. Pretty boilerplate stuff. So this is my list item view. It's got a tag name, li, section, item. OK, so section, item. Oops, wrong one. And we were having a look at that a few minutes ago. So that's actually going to show us the name of the section. And I think that's pretty much that. OK, so Let's go and have a quick look at the story. The story's a bit more complicated. Same as what you saw before, defaults, this story road collection thing, you might think, oh, Richard, what are you using that for? The reason why I've done that is because I need to reshape this data. In order for the data to fit into this 12-column grid, I need to sort of skew this data so that I can bind really nicely to it in the HTML. And in order to do that, I just recreate the data in a slightly different shape. And that's what the story row collection is really all about. Notice it's extending a backbone collection. So it doesn't support pagination. It's really just used to squeeze the data into the right shape to make it easy for me to bind to it, just like what we've been doing in XAML. So the story collection, let's get that up a bit so you can see some of that. The story collection extends the paginator. I use the request pager because the Guardian API supports pagination on the server. I've got an initialize. Here is this awesome amplify bit of stuff that even somebody like me can use. So I'm basically setting up a new store, and I'm saying, you know, this store is going to expire in 12 hours. So when I hit it, bring it back, stash it, give it that expiry number, and when it gets more, if it's past the expiration date, it will whack it, and we'll go and get some new data. Lots of other bits of sort of paginator-specific scaffolding that is good, but it's not really that interesting. We've got different things about page size, about the format, my API key. I've got some stuff to sort of find different stories. So one thing is, if you want to do deep linking, so if you want to, you're using my app, you send me a link, I can click on the link, it will fire it up. It'll go and do that deep linking thing, find the story and show me the story. And if I haven't got it in local storage, it'll go and get it from the endpoint. I have another parse function in here. And this parse function, basically what I'm doing here is I don't have any control over the third party. And so some of the data that I get can be a little bit spurious. It might have DRM, or it might not have a complete article body, and I don't want to show those because they're not very useful looking at a story that doesn't have any text. So that's what I'm doing in that parse function. Okay, so that's the model and the story. Let's go and have a quick look at the story view. Very similar to the section view. Story list view extends the layout. I've got an initialize function. I'm binding up to the reset. When the reset happens, I'm going to add all of the new model objects that are in my collection. I've got a little bit of jQuery stuff to try and do my infinite scrolling. And this is where I use that story row collection in order to be able to sort of adhere to Bootstrap's 12-column grid. And so you'll notice that I've got a little bit of a sneaky hard-wired number here, which is the number 4. The reason why it's number 4 is because I want 4 columns. So when it comes out, it's just popping the data out into you know, 4 columns in each row. So that's what that's doing. Again, I use this insert view, and the view I'm going to insert is an item. I pass in the model, and I render that. So that's quite nice. Let's just go down a little bit further. Before I render the page, what I actually do is I actually call this pager on the model and say, hey, go and get me some more data. For each of the rows that we pump out, here I'm using a Bootstrap specific class, row fluid, and we're going to insert everything into a div. We're wired up to a change, so when the model changes, we'll react to that and update the view. And before we render, basically what we're going to do is just use underscore. We're going to do a for each over the k collection that we have, and we're going to insert a view for each of the items in our collection. Story list item, those are our individual items that we push out onto the screen. Let's go and have a look at that story item. So a bit more action going on there, a bit more data binding going on, and you can see here the title, and I've just got a little bit of sort of code around it. Some of this code could go into the JavaScript if you preferred to do it that way. And I'm just basically saying, you know, get the web title property from the model that's been passed in. And if it's not there, then just sort of do something half sensible, which is output a bit of an empty screen. And fields is basically all of the content for that particular article. Okay, there's one thing in here that I do want to show you. So where are you? You're here. Are you here? Okay. I just want to show you these. So these are basically links. They're my two buttons at the bottom of the screen. Oops, where did he go? So these are two links that I have at the bottom of the screen. They've been styled by Bootstrap. And if we go and look in Views Story, and let's go down here, I just want to show you quickly how we can bind up. So with the events that we mentioned earlier on with regards to what Backbone provides us, it also provides us with this ability to be able to wire into events. So here I'm wiring into the click event. I can reference it using the hash, using the class, and I can say, hey, I want you to execute the next story when you click on the next story button, and the same for the previous story. And what we do here is I'm actually using the router to get the next story. So I'm actually using that router sequence in terms of how our routes are defined in our app in order to get the next or the previous story. Okay. We're nearly there. So this is a router. I've defined some routes. Index is my default. We've already seen the section. So whenever we do that model.id and pass that to the web server, it's going to call the function that we've defined, section. And then when we do the story whack ID, it's going to call this story function. When the app first starts up, we say, OK, go new me up a new section collection, go new me up a new view, pass the model in, which is what we're doing here, to the view. And then once you've done all that, call this fetch for me to go and populate the collection. And that sort of kicks everything off. Let's just walk down here, because this is the other thing that I want to show you. So remember in the slide, we had those different layouts. We had a story layout, and we had a main layout. And the way that the layout manager works is that we define these, and we basically have a boilerplate function that I've defined, which is called useLayout. And what that's going to do is it's basically going to hit the server and pull back down the right HTML templates that I need in order to render this composite view on the screen. And you can see there are the three things: section header view, story list view, and the story list item. Sorry, the story section list view. And I'm chaining this so I can just do a dot render on the end of that. So that's the main one. And let's just go and have a quick look for the story one. So here's the story one, use the layout, story, load up these views. These are the views that are composite views that create my story layout, section header, story view, section list view. I've got lots of other functions in there which I find rather interesting, but I doubt that you'll find than that. Interesting. Okay, so this is my layout manager, and this is how I configure it. I've got different paths, and I say that the layout is templates WAC layout, and the templates are defined in templates, and you can see up here in the screen, I've got templates, layout, main. Let's have a look down here. I missed one. Where is it? Where are you? So here we go. Section list view is defined here. Section header view is defined here. And the story list view is defined here. Okay, where do we go? When we set up the layout manager, we need to say to the layout manager, hey, this is where these templates live, and this is where I want you to go and get them from. So again, we just do this jQuery $AJAX, and we set it up. So every time we move, layout manager says, hey, what layout do you want? Oh, okay, you want the story layout? Do I need to go and fetch those HTML templates if they haven't been loaded? Yes, I do. Boom. It uses those paths that we've defined and fetches those templates for us. And then I've effectively got the crux pieces of my app that hold everything together. I've got some namespaces, views, models, and routers. This is my sort of CRUD to RESTful mapping that we talked about and saw a little bit earlier on. And this is boilerplate use layout. Once you've created this, you know, once you've written this code, and I think I only tweaked a little bit, and it's freely available on the internet. Done it once, don't need to do it again. It's quite nice. And you can basically see that Backbone is creating a new layout. It's inserting that layout into a particular element in the DOM, and it then renders that layout. And I have some initialization code which effectively just hooks into the DOM when it's ready, and we can go and kick everything off and load it. Okay. So that's a look through the code. I'm running out of time, so what I want to do is I just want to jump from there. Let's just make this a tad bigger. Should we go 130? Okay, so let me fire this up so you can see it. So we'll debug this in a second. Same app, built in Windows 8. Has pagination, uses local storage. Everything that you saw in the web app does the same here. I take advantage of the flip view. If I had a touch screen, then I could swipe. I go like this. I can go into a section. You can see, if you're looking at the debug window, you can see the sections loading up. When I scroll the window, I'm wired into the paginator. And when I scroll, hopefully what you'll see in a minute, when it hits its threshold, it'll go, and there you go. So now it's got to the end, and it's gone, oh, okay, you're still scrolling? Yes, you are. I'm going to go and paginate. So everything that you saw in the web app, I've pretty much picked up, brought into Windows 8, and all I've changed is the view. All of that great stuff that we saw in Backbone, I've used everything. I haven't touched any of that code. I had to tweak some of the namespaces and some of the minutiae of the detail, but very trivial. The main thing has been the view. I've been able to do that because we had this pragmatic approach to saying, right, okay, we're going to have this separation of concerns between view, model, collections, controller, view model, router. So really, really nice to be able to have that ability. So now we can build applications that run in a browser, cross-device, cross-platform, and with a little bit of work, you can get them to work in Windows 8. The other things that I've added here, let's just restart this guy. So I initialize the app. So rather than a web request coming in, We're on the desktop, so there is no web request. It's an initialize thing that happens. Our app gets initialized. All the same things that you saw before in the web app, all that same process happens. The extra things that I have in here, I'll just show you this. I've got a splash screen. I should have an extended splash screen somewhere. There it is. So that helps me loading up the data. The experience has changed a little bit because in the web app, I only ever load a section. In this particular app, as you saw, we load all the sections. So I just had to change the way that certain things work in order to support that experience. So rather than going and getting one section at a time, I just basically say, hey, go get all of the sections and load them up. That takes a bit more time, but hey, I can fall back to the extended splash screen and put up a spinner to help this experience a little bit easier. I've got tile notifications as well, so we set up the tile notifications, so when it's running, as new information comes in, it'll spin around, pop it up, nice experiences. I'm happy to show you more of this after the session if that's of interest to you. So what I'll just do now is just pop to here because we're going to... So unfortunately, we're going to have to sort of flip through these. Let's... So this is very similar to what we saw before, apart from we use a couple of extra bits, which is navigation, and I use the binding list that's baked into WinJS. So rather than using a router, I use navigation, which is built in. Same thing that's happening. Wire everything up, events trigger, everything gets notified up in the view. I'm using data binding, so taking advantage of that. Sorry, guys, let me just jump down to this because I want to make sure that we get to look at this. So hopefully, looking back, some really useful stuff out there with regards to building JavaScript, complete client-side architectures with JavaScript. I think it's a very, very exciting time at the moment for taking that approach. Backbone does an awful lot to help us and provide us with this ability that we can build non-proprietary applications and also take on proprietary applications if we so wish. And we can reuse a number of those modules that we defined in the web application and reuse them in WinJS, which is very nice. And, you know, looking forwards, I kind of think this is just really the start of something that is just going to get bigger. And what's really nice about this is that the community, you guys and me, we can help move this forward into the directions that we want. So I think that's a really important thing to say. And that's pretty much everything from me. Sorry I had to rush at the end. I'm more than happy to share the slide deck with you. I'm here for the rest of the day as well, so if you want to look at some code, I'm more than happy to do that with you. Thank you for listening.